Welcome to Women on the Line, a community radio national feminist current affairs program featuring the voices of women and gender diverse people. Produced at 3CR Community Radio in Naarm, Melbourne, and broadcast on the Community Radio Network. I'm Cleese Hart.
Now, when they implemented that ban, it struck at both those things. It stopped the medication being dispensed for the people that were hoping to get onto them. And psychologically, it just crushed them.
Women on the Line acknowledges that this program is produced and presented on the stolen land of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nations and that their sovereignty was never ceded. We pay our respects to their elders past and present, as well as to those of the First Nations people whose country you're hearing us from. This week on the program, we look into the distressing news that Queensland's LNP government have doubled down on their ban on young people seeking access to gender-affirming care. The ban on accessing puberty blockers and hormone treatment for new adolescent patients in the public health system was initially put in place in January this year and on October 28 was immediately reinstated by the Queensland state government shortly after being overturned in a Supreme Court challenge brought by the mother of a trans child. We speak with Brianna Hammond, president of QTrans, and Piper Valkyrie from Maganjin People's Pride to understand the context of the ban, its impact on young people trying to access gender-affirming care, and what the response has been so far from the trans and gender-diverse community and their allies. This is Brianna Now.
I'm Brianna Hammond. I'm the president of QTrans. We used to be called the Australian Transgender Support Association of Queensland, but we've had a bit of a transition ourselves and modernised our name, so it's more inclusive of gender-diverse identities, and we are now known as QTrans.
Thank you so much for joining us on the program today. So a lot has been happening in Queensland in recent times in relation to the rights of trans and gender diverse young people. That came to a head recently on October 28th, where we saw a lot of things unfold in relation to the ongoing ban put in place by the Queensland state government on puberty blockers and hormone therapies for new adolescent patients. But before we get into the latest events, could you tell us about the ban and how it came to be?
The basis of the ban essentially goes back to the 2023 and 2024 LNP state conventions, where they passed resolutions essentially calling on the Queensland government, or the Queensland LNP government, to ban the provision of any hormone therapies within the Queensland Children's Centre Service. Skip ahead to the 5th of January this year, and we had the Deputy Premier, Joe Blay, make a public announcement that it was the intention of the government to roll back access to services through the Queensland Children's Gender Service, and that culminated in the decision of 28 January that was announced by the Health Minister, where they used the excuse of there was a technical issue with the Cairns clinic to put a halt to all of the provision of children's gender services in terms of hormone therapies for stage one and stage two, on the basis that there wasn't proper consent. We haven't heard a lot about that since then, but we most certainly have had the Health Minister make it absolutely clear that it was his intention for that not to continue. So it was essentially based in religious and political, without religious and a political framework. It had nothing to do with there being any doubts about the quality of the medicine or the science.
We will touch on this question of evidence-based care in our conversation going forward. So there was a challenge to the ban by the mother of a trans child in the Supreme Court, which culminated on Tuesday, October 28th, when Supreme Court Justice Peter Callaghan ruled that the ban was unlawful. And he did that on the basis that the initial directive issued by Director of Queensland Health, Dr. David Rosengren, was unlawful as the 22-minute online meeting with health services that was held in relation to the ban did not amount to consultation, which is required in legal terms. So can you tell us a bit more about that and what happened next?
Yeah, well, essentially it's an administrative decision by the minister, and when those decisions are made, they need to pay regard to all parties concerned and ensure that they have the opportunity to put forward whatever information and advice that they'd like to tender. It's not possible within administrative law for the minister just to make a decision without consulting with affected parties. And he did that, and it was quite a abject failure of his duties within that role. So it was always clear it was going to be overturned. What was also similarly obvious was that the minister was going to move to re-implement the ban using either another head of power within the Health Act or provide some form of consultation that was essentially just farcical, to allow him to re-implement that decision, which he has subsequently, within hours of the Supreme Court handing down its overturning of the ban.
Yes, so that is Health Minister Tim Nicholls who yes. reinstated the freeze there. And, I mean, that is a hugely dramatic turn of events. I mean, even if it sort of was clear that probably the Health Minister would flex those powers. I mean, what has the impact been from this on the trans and gender diverse community in Queensland?
Well, it was another blow, especially to the 491 adolescents who were progressing through the Queensland Children's Gender Service and hoping to get access to those stage one or stage two blockers. There's a lot of dysphoria within that cohort, and that's why they're attending the gender service, hoping to go through the issues with psychologists and the multidisciplinary team that are there. And they work through things with the children and their parents over a period of 12 to 18 months before they get anywhere near the medicine. So there's a lot of psychological work and support work that goes on, trying to ascertain where that person is in life, how strongly they feel about their gender identity, whether that be trans masc, trans femme, non-binary. It's not just a matter of them coming into the clinic and saying, oh, look, I'm trans, I want to go on these blockers, and they give them a card to go out to a vending machine and they're dished out. it's quite a laborious process. But it's a process that creates confidence within those individuals that they've been taken seriously and that their psychological and their medical needs will be addressed. Now, when they implemented that ban, it struck at both those things. It stopped the medication being dispensed for the people that were hoping to get onto them. And psychologically, it just crushed them, because a big issue with young people is that the feeling that they don't want to progress to the development of secondary sex characteristics. And later on in life, things like beards and genitalia cause massive distress, and they're massively expensive to try and correct. Surgeries, you know, can run to hundreds of thousands of dollars for those individuals, as well as the obvious dysphoria that they must experience up until that point. So, yeah, they've lost a lot of confidence in the system, and they're having to deal with that ongoing distress. There are some positives that have come out of it. We've seen a new service pop up in Queensland called Gender Health Australia that is filling the role of the Queensland Gender Service, but in a private practice setting. It's a multidisciplinary team, and they're able to access every bit of service, and probably a little bit more, that the Children's Gender Service were offering. But parents have to pay for it. It's not free, but it's there. So I think that's one positive, that there is now more service out there. But, yeah, the family still has to bear the cost of that in the meantime.
You mentioned earlier that this is sort of a religious and political decision on the part of the Queensland government. There is a lot of discussion from the Queensland government about so-called evidence-based care for young people. Let's talk more about that, and especially this sort of ominous references to quote-unquote scientific evidence coming from overseas. So that, in my understanding, is a reference to the CAS review, which took place in 2024 in the United Kingdom. Could you talk a bit more about the impact of that review how Australian guidelines and systems differ from what's currently taking place in the NHS?
Yeah, well, essentially CAS did not do a review of the medical evidence. They looked at some of the psychological stuff, and then they mistook and misunderstood a lot of the psychological issues associated with that. And as far as Australia is concerned, yes, there is some attempts to import that report to the Australian context. We have our own guidelines in Australia called AusPath. They provide the standards of care that are first class. They're first class in the world in terms of the regimen that has been created for dealing with patients who present to a medical professional and indicate that they're experiencing some type of gender dysphoria, a gender presentation that's inconsistent with the sex they were announced at birth. And, the National Health and Medical Research Council is looking at that issue at the moment in terms of those standards of care. We're extremely confident that they're going to get a very big tick about those standards of care, and hopefully that will set the benchmark for the states to follow. I'm confident that a few states will do that, but the Northern Territory and Queensland, yeah, I'm extremely sceptical.
Yes, so as you have touched on, under the Constitution, health is something that falls to state governments to administrate. It really is specific to which government is in power in which state. So you mentioned AusPath, and you also mentioned this number, 491 young people who have been prevented by the ban from accessing gender-affirming care. I understand AusPath is currently putting forward something called Project 491. Could you talk to us more about that?
Project 491 is an initiative by AusPath to raise funds to provide that next level of care that the cohort that had been attending the QCGS and were being assessed, so that they can move to stage one and stage two puberty blockers or hormonal treatment. And they've been very successful in raising money. They are still raising money for the process. QTrans is a deductible gift recipient organisation, and we are also taking donations on behalf of that project and passing them through to AusPath. So it's been a fairly significant way to practically deal with the decision by the health department to ban the progression from assessment to treatment. And we're extremely grateful that they have intervened and provided the confidence and the structure to raise those funds and allow families to access that next level of care. And I'm not sure of the exact numbers, but we're looking at a sizable cohort within that 491 people that have been able to access a treatment package and get the next level of care that they have been seeking.
On community radio around so-called Australia, you're listening to Women on the Line. You just heard President of QTrans, Brianna Hammond, speaking about the Queensland State Government's continued ban on access to puberty blockers and hormone treatment for new adolescent patients in the public health system. To help facilitate access to gender-affirming care for the young people shut out of the public health system in Queensland by the state government ban, you can donate to Project 491. Just search for Project 491. Next, we'll hear from Piper Valkyrie from Maganjin People's Pride to discuss the impact of the ban and the grassroots response from the trans and gender diverse community. This is Piper now.
I'm Piper Valkyrie. I'm from Maganjin in Queensland, also known as Brisbane. And I'm part of a queer community and activism group called Maganjin People's Pride. And we've been doing some protests and work around the ban on youth hormones and healthcare for trans kids recently.
Thank you so much for coming on the program today, Piper. And yeah, so the ban, it's been a pretty big topic recently. What has been the impact on the trans and gender diverse community in Queensland of these events?
I think one of the biggest impacts that I've seen, it's not even just the direct physical impact, but it's knowing that our community is under attack. And so there's a really big kind of mental impact to that. I know a lot of people who are far more afraid, who are worried about what's going to happen next, whether they're going to have, you know, their ability to get meds and stuff taken away from them. And there's, you know, I know people who are afraid to take public transport, to go out in public because of harassment and abuse. And this is really all just feeding into that, you know. It's not about safety or... Yeah, it's not about safety. It's really just about feeding into a culture war. And the end result of that is that real people are hurt, and it really sucks.
You mentioned a culture war. From your perspective, do you see the Queensland state government attempting to import a US-style political rhetoric to shore up their support base? Or do you have a take on what is happening here?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, there are some huge parallels to what's been going on in the US. And I think the LNP particularly, its main priority is to basically stay in power, and it gets so much funding from giant corporations, people with a lot of money. And so their priority is to keep those guys happy, change all the laws that let them avoid paying taxes, and build properties that exceed, you know, local planning limits, that kind of thing. And to get away with all that, they instead distract everyone with stuff that is not actually important, you know, in the grand scheme of things. They whip up racism, they whip up misogyny, and now they're whipping up transphobia in a bid to pit working class people who have a lot more shared interests than we have, you know, things to fight about. They're whipping up hatred so that we fight each other rather than combining our efforts and actually standing up against shitty governments and taking back power to make our lives better, which really sucks.
You mentioned Maganjin People's Pride. Can you talk to us more about what you have been organising around in relation to the ban, and I suppose what the community response has been, you know, in the lead up to the court hearing and also following the reinstatement of the ban?
Maganjin People's Pride, we're just a little grassroots group that's been operating most recently for a couple of years. And we do events and stuff, but we also do a lot of rallies and protests. And so this year, actually back in January, when Tim Nichols announced the ban for the first time, there was a mother of a trans kid who basically said, well, I'm going to his office to protest, and I hope other people will join me there. And someone got us in contact with her, and very overnight, we kind of put together a little rally, to say, hey, you know, this isn't okay and we're going to stand up to it. And we had a similar thing just last week when we found out that the mother who was challenging the legitimacy of the ban in court, that their case was being heard. And so we kind of reached out and said, hey, would they like support? And then organized a rally around that, just to kind of show up and allow the community to show up and have a bit more control over, well, have our say, basically, to be able to get people in front of cameras, to get it out on the press, and to let trans people say why this is important and why we won't stop fighting. And so We had a big celebration for about 3 hours after the Supreme Court case. And then, of course, Tim Nichols just reinstituted the ban using a different directive. So, you know, if we're going off, it took 9 months to challenge the first ban. If it's possible to challenge this one, it'll probably take a similar amount of time. So, you know, we can't rely on the legal system to change this. And so at the moment, we're looking at more protests, more activity to try and shift the narrative and to convince the government that this is not something that they can win and that we need them to stop it.
And if listeners are wanting to support trans and gender diverse community members in Queensland, you know, their families and their allies. Like, what is the best thing that people can do across so-called Australia to lend our support?
So at the moment, right now, the ban is affecting kids and their families. So really on the ground, practically, you know, there were 491 kids in January who were still waiting for treatment. It'll now be more than that. You know, it's been 9 months. So there's going to be even more kids who are waiting to get on puberty blockers to see a psychologist. And I really want to figure out a way to help them. Obviously, we've got, you may have heard about Project 491, mm-hmm. which is a really great initiative trying to help some of those families get access to healthcare privately. So if you can donate to them, that's really useful. Just Google Project 491 and you'll find that. But otherwise, honestly, mutual aid and mutual care are really important at the moment because it's really a tough time to be a trans person in Queensland and in, all of so-called Australia and the world, honestly. You know, we had a great swing for a while there in favor of trans rights, but now we're seeing that pushback and it's just really tough to be around. So yeah, honestly, like, check in with your trans friends, see how they're doing, see what extra support they need, because it's really tough. And a lot of the things that trans people struggle with are access to medication, to psychology, and access to housing. There are a lot of people who are either in an unsupportive environment or just don't have housing. And it's a really big problem for our community. And so if you can help someone out with rent or help them find a place to stay, you know, that's really big issue. And we really need more just direct community mutual aid there.
And is that kind of mutual aid something that Maganjin People's Pride are doing as well?
At the moment, our capacity hasn't been there to be able to do that, but it's something that I'm really passionate about because I just see so many people struggling, and I really want us to be able to all work together to help each other as a community. So it's something I'm trying to work to make happen. Mm-hmm. But honestly, and actually, what we need both in Maganjin People's Pride, and I think just all over the country, just everywhere, we need more people to be involved, to step up and say, hey, you know, I'm busy, but I could help write a few emails or help kind of organize to look into some housing for someone, and for people to get together and help each other out with that, because it can be a lot of work. And, you know, we're trying to build up capacity at the moment so that we can take on some of those tasks. And we just need the people power.
And obviously the ban is currently in place just in the state of Queensland at this stage. I mean, we've been talking a lot about solidarity and sort of what that can look like, but do you have any feeling, Piper, as to, you know, whether this kind of ideology might spread if it's not nipped in the bud?
Yeah, I think that's definitely the intention. I think, you know, this is just the latest in a long line of kind of culture wars that is being stirred up to keep people angry and fighting against each other. And I think it's just so easy. It's so easy to rile up people who, you know, are not informed or don't have a close relationship with a trans person and don't understand us. I think it's really easy to stir up hate like that. And yeah, definitely. I mean, we've seen a lot from our fringe conservative parties, your One Nations and whatever Bobcat is doing. They're always trying to go for this stuff. And until, I think, fairly recently, you know, the LNP hadn't been as explicitly transphobic and openly pushing for a reduction in trans rights, but I think they found that it's pretty fertile ground. And so if they think that this is something that will work well for them, that can help them stay in power and keep their interests alive, yeah, I think they will absolutely, wherever they can, wherever they're in power, jump on it and just hurt people with shitty policies and taking away healthcare. And so I think it's really important for us to show up and fight back and be really loud doing it, because the more that they see that there's resistance to this and that it's not popular, the less attractive that makes it for them to then go and actually make real healthcare changes that affect people in horrible ways.
You just heard Piper Valkyrie from Maganjin People's Pride speaking about the impact of the Queensland government's decision to reinstate the ban on accessing puberty blockers and hormone treatment for new adolescent patients in the public health system shortly after it was overturned by the Supreme Court on October 28. To find out more about Maganjin People's Pride, search for Maganjin, that's Maganjin People's Pride on Instagram. Earlier in the program, we also heard from Brianna Hammond, president of Qtrans. If you'd like to help facilitate access to gender-affirming care for the young people shut out of the public health system in Queensland by the ban, search for Project 491. And if the content of today's program has been distressing for you or someone you love and you'd like to reach out for some support, you can contact QLife at qlife.org.au or on 1800 184 527, and they operate right across so-called Australia. And that's all for Women on the Line today. Women on the Line is a community radio national feminist current affairs program featuring the voices of women and gender diverse people. This program was produced in Naarm, Melbourne, with the amazing support of 3CR staff, so a big thank you to them. Women on the Line is broadcast across so-called Australia on the Community Radio Network, and we greatly appreciate financial support from the Community Broadcasting Foundation. We welcome your comments or thoughts on today's show, so send us an email to womenontheline@gmail.com or phone 3CR on 03 9419 8377. If you'd like more information about today's program or to listen to the show again, you can find what you need on the Women on the Line website. That's 3cr.org.au/womenontheline. The theme music for Women on the Line is by Ripley Kavara. I'm Cleese Hart. Hope you can tune in again next time.